Dozens of House Democrats, including the leaders of the Armed Services, Foreign Affairs, and Intelligence Committees, called on President Biden to immediately close the military prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Weeks before the 20th anniversary of the September 11th attack, which helped lead to the prison's opening, the 75 lawmakers sent a letter calling the prison's continued operation a stain on the country's reputation that undermines its ability to advocate for human rights and the rule of law. The prison at Guantanamo has held nearly 800 prisoners throughout its history, but currently holds only 39 men, many aging and increasingly infirm. 28 have never been charged with crimes over nearly two decades of imprisonment. Today marks the 56th anniversary of the signing of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, which was intended to prevent racial discrimination in voting. The Voting Rights Act has long been hailed as the most successful piece of civil rights legislation ever passed by the U.S. Congress. Its advances are now under threat after the Supreme Court in Shelby County versus Holder decision of 2013 overturned critical parts of the 1965 Act. And today marks 76 years since the United States dropped the world's first atomic bomb on the Japanese city of Hiroshima, killing an estimated 140,000 people. During a ceremony today at the site of the blast, Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga vowed Japan would work with other nations to promote nuclear disarmament. Currently in Washington, it's partly sunny and 88 degrees. In New York, it is sunny and 88. I'm Askia Muhammad. Thank you for listening to WPFW Washington and WBAI New York.
The time now is 2 minutes past 2 p.m. Stay tuned for Neurodiversity Experts Talk with Natalie Tandyway. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
This is WBAI 99.5 FM, listener-supported radio, streaming live in New York City, online at WBAI.org. I'm Natalie Tandyway, and you're listening to Neurodiversity Experts Talk. The term neurodiversity embraces differences in brain function and brain wiring as part of the expected diversity and variation in human beings. Neurodiversity Experts Talk features specialists in areas such as ADHD, autism, learning disabilities, speech and language disorders, and other neurodevelopmental-based differences. It's estimated that between 15 to 20% of the population may be impacted by one or more such differences. Today, we're talking about clinician training in neurodiversity-affirming couples therapy with Adrian Clements, M-A-L-M-F-T. Adrian is an integrative trauma and relationship therapist, resilience educator, speaker, and consultant. She's founder of Head and Heart Integrative Psychotherapy, a virtual therapy practice based in Austin, Texas, and specializes in working with adults and couples navigating these intersections. In addition to years of experience working with mixed neurotype and neurodivergent couples, Adrian is a proud 2E ADHDer herself and is in a neurodivergent marriage. Adrian is facilitating a clinician training called Ethics of Neurodiversity Affirming Couples Therapy for mental health professionals seeking to learn more about neurodiversity in the context of facilitating couples therapy. It's a virtual training with access to the recording for registrants who can't attend live. So for dates and information, you can go to adrianclements.com and click on events, or you can go to the bit.ly 3HUWGVY. Welcome, Adrian.
Thank you for having me, Natalie. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm really excited. So there's a lot to teach us, and we only have a little time, so I'm going to jump right in. Neurodiversity affirming therapy is really an emerging concept and discipline, and it's being shaped as we speak right now. So first of all, how can we think about defining what it means to be neurodiversity affirming?
Yeah, so to be neurodiversity affirming means not only do we accept the fact that neurodiversity exists, that there is this wide variation in brains and nervous systems and neurotypes across our human species, but that we value that variation. We see strengths in that variation. And because that variation exists, that we as a human species are better off because of it.
Okay, that's helpful. It gives us a sense of what this means and where we're starting from. What would you consider some of the consensus elements in defining what constitutes neurodiversity-affirming therapy overall? And I realize that there's many types of therapy in addition to couples counseling, so I'm trying to get an understanding of what we're looking for when we say we're looking for neurodiversity-affirming therapy, or what our expectations are.
Absolutely. So in general, what neurodiversity affirming therapy means is that we value these unique brain differences there. So instead of coming from a medical-based pathologizing model, we're going to go from a strengths-based model in therapy. So some of the things that we're going to be looking at is kind of, you know, if there were people out there looking for a therapist, trying to know if they're neurodiversity affirming, they're looking at the language. Is the language coming from a strengths-based or a deficit-based place? And for therapists, it's really coming from, how are you conceptualizing this case? Is it from a strengths-based place, or is it from that more pathologizing deficit-based place?
And what would be the language that would key us off to more pathology and medically oriented versus this strength space, just so we can understand what it sounds like or looks like?
Absolutely, absolutely. So for a lot of different neurotypes, we're trying to move away from using the label disorder. In the mental health field, we understand that we still have to use that label because of insurance purposes, right? For people to get their therapy covered, they have to have a diagnosis label. However, we're trying to move away from that and seeing these as these natural variations. So they're not disorders, they're just differences. And I like how you use that word, neurodifferences. And so that's one thing we might look at. We're going to be looking at if there's some, like, maybe incorrect language on there. The languaging has changed around a lot of things. You know, there is no longer ADD. There's only ADHD, and there's various types within ADHD. There's ADHD inattentive type, there's ADHD hyperactive type, and then we've got the combined type there. So if people are specifically using some of that old language like that, or using Asperger's, which is no longer within the DSM, and which the autistic community has clearly asked us to no longer use from a majority standpoint, there are still people who identify with that label, and neurodivergent people get to make that choice for themselves. But broad strokes purposes, those are some of the things that we would be looking for. In addition to that, it would be in reference to autism specifically, if there was person first language there, like person with autism, instead of it identity first language, autistic person. Once again, the autistic community has been very clear that the majority prefer to be identified as autistic in that way. Other things we might look for is, are they using functioning labels, things being high functioning or low functioning? In the neurodiversity movement, we're trying to move away from functioning labels and really talk about things in terms of support needs. And people's support needs are going to be different across different domains of their life. So they may have low support needs in one area and then high support needs in another. So looking at languaging for that, around that, can help you know, is this therapist neurodiversity affirming or not?
Okay, that is really helpful. It makes it a little more concrete. So what is meant by the term neurodiversity affirming couples therapy?
Yes. So this is where we're applying that neurodiversity paradigm framework to couples therapy. So that means that we're not seeing neurodivergence as a problem within the relationship. And couples therapists across the board know that the foundation of our therapy, if you're trained in systems-based therapy, is the person is not the problem. The pattern is the problem. And so it's really important that we continue that when working with mixed neurotype couples. But what tends to happen because of the pathology paradigm that exists out there is some couples therapists will see the issue as the neurodivergence and try to make that the focus of therapy. And that's what leads to therapy failure for these couples.
Okay, so you introduced some very important ideas. I want to take a note of this term therapy failure so we can come back to it. But also this idea, so you're saying that in a neurodiversity-affirming couples therapy model, you're looking at the couple and looking at their patterns rather than seeing this neurodivergence as, even though it might be the reason they came into the office or the reason they say they came into the office is, you know, we're mixed neurotype or one person's neurotypical, one person's neurodivergent, and it seems to be causing problems. In this affirming model, you're going to say, okay, let's look at your patterns. The neurodivergence isn't the actual problem itself.
That's right. That's right. It's an interface issue, right?
Okay.
We can think of it like, if you're in a cross-cultural marriage, which I'm in a neurodivergent marriage, that's also a cross-cultural marriage, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes from those cultural upbringings, we come with different perspectives, and there's just that, like, misfiring in communication, where things don't land correctly, right? Intention and impact are different. And so what's really important for couples therapists to do is really look at this as this interface issue, right? Is the couple speaking two different languages here? What drives that language, and how can we help them to learn a bit of each other's language and co-create a common language together that's unique to that couple that honors their neurotype differences and their needs in those different ways.
Okay, that's really helpful. Listeners, this is WBAI 99.5 FM, listener-supported radio, streaming live in New York City, online at WBAI.org. You're listening to Neurodiversity Experts Talk with Natalie Tondiway, and today we're talking clinician training in neurodiversity-affirming couples therapy with Adrienne Clements, licensed marriage and family therapist. For more information about the training that she is facilitating, you can go to adrienneclements.com. That's adrienneclements.com/events, or there's a bit.ly, which is 3HUWGVY. You can message us at ndexpertsinfo@gmail.com and like neurodiversity, expertsinfo@gmail.com, or text 914-620-2995 if you want to share any topics or guest suggestions or have questions or feedback. Thanks so much. Okay, Adrienne, I have so many questions for you. This is a really important topic, and it's important to take this time with you. So is there, since you're actually facilitating a training, I kind of want to turn to clinicians at this point.
Sure.
What do you feel that therapists and counselors need to be open to in order to have an optimal training experience in any kind of neurodiversity-affirming training for practitioners? Because this training is very emergent in terms of a field, so this may be the first time that some people are coming to this kind of a training as a clinician.
Absolutely. You've got to be open as a clinician to being a lifelong learner here, and that you're going to be presented with information that may be very different than what you received in your graduate school programs from that medical pathologizing standpoint. So this is going to be a whole new framework for some clinicians to really look at it through this way. So keeping an open mind about it, being willing to explore our own internalized biases and ableism that shows up. We've grown up in a society where ableism is systemic, right? It's built into our institutions. It's built into our medical models and practices. And all of us have internalized ableist beliefs. And so being willing to really explore those within yourself and get comfortable with being uncomfortable if this is a new concept to you, and being willing to just open your mind and really imagine what it's like, especially if you're a neurotypical clinician or in the neuromajority, to try to think about what it could be like to live in a neurodivergent person's shoes.
Okay, that's helpful. What have been your concerns in terms of creating sound training for neurodiversity affirming couples therapy? It's an area that just, there aren't a lot of visible experts, and it's emerging and it's dynamic. So it's not as if there's an agreed upon foundation or like core curriculum. So given all that, what have you been concerned with in terms of taking this on?
Yeah, for sure. One, doing justice to a very, as you're saying, deep, broad, dynamic topic, right? There are so many different forms of neurodivergence that exist on this planet. We tend to only focus, there's a lot of focus on the neurodevelopmental conditions that are neurodivergence, mm-hmm. autism, ADHD, but there's a lot of space that has not been covered in terms of other forms of neurodivergence. Many forms of mental illness would fit under this umbrella. Many forms of acquired neurodivergence would fit under this umbrella as well. And so trying to figure out how to not only just speak about ADHD and autism, but neurodivergence in this broad way that we're looking at, what are the commonalities between these neurotypes that are important to be aware of with it. So I've been really trying to pay attention to what are these kind of areas of domain that neurodivergent brains are influenced differently, mm-hmm. right? So really focusing on looking at executive functioning and the sensory processing, emotional regulation, communication styles, and connection styles. Those tend to be some traits where they're going to show up differently in different neurotypes. So if we as clinicians can really look at that, that's one of the things I've been focusing on, is trying to empower clinicians to know more about that. So when they're in there with couples and they're not sure what's going on, maybe this invisible barrier, they can start looking at some of those and go, what's going on here? What's missing that we need to work with in terms of this pattern?
And can I hear that rundown again? It was emotion regulation, sensory processing, connection
executive
styles.
Functioning.
Executive
mm-hmm.
functioning. Okay.
Yeah. Connection styles. So that okay. would be the way that we connect with other people. And then there's that communication style. So those are
okay,
kind of
that's helpful.
Similar, but two different things.
So those are five areas, I believe it's five, right?
Exactly.
Where you can take a look at the individual and the couple and their system and look for ways to look for the patterns that may be disruptive, and also look for ways to support the couple and have the people support themselves and each other. Is that kind of the point?
Exactly. Bingo. You got it, Natalie. This is a great way that clinicians can kind of just hold in their mind for case conceptualization, right?
Okay.
Because the clients are, having their own lived experience, and some clients are going to come into couples therapy too, who might not even realize that they're neurodivergent mm-hmm. or that
right.
that's a factor.
Right. And I think that is going to happen for clinicians who go to trainings as well.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Many people who think they're neurotypical out there aren't as neurotypical as they think they are.
Right. And, it happens all the time.
Yes. Yes. And so that's looking at those areas and kind of helps us be able to look at ourselves and look at others, and then be able to start explaining those differences to our clients, which can open up the conversation around exploring neurodivergence from the couples therapy standpoint, especially if the couple's never considered it.
And can you just tell us a little bit about the training that you are offering? Like, who can participate? Like, which licenses? And what can participants expect to learn about and do as, like, the substance of the experience?
Yeah, absolutely. So this training is open to any licensed mental health professional. There are CEUs that are available that meet Texas license requirements. Mm-hmm. And what we're going to be covering in this training is called the Ethics of Neurodiversity Affirming Couples Therapy. So it's really rooted in, like, the foundation of our practice, looking at our ethics from our boards and from our licenses and pulling those, some of them that are across the board, right? Do no harm and non-discrimination. Mm-hmm. And when we think about the way that neurodivergent folks have been treated under this medicalized mental health model, there's been a lot of harm and there's been a lot of discrimination that have happened. So we're going to be kind of like exploring those things. We're also going to look mm-hmm. at the social model of disability, which is a very different model for many people to be framing things through, which mm-hmm. basically says, right, that people aren't disabled in a deficit-based way because something's different about them. They're disabled because society has not created accommodations or structured itself to be accommodating to different neurotypes. So that's going to be a very different way for some clinicians to look at it. And we're going to explore how they can apply this new awareness. We're also going to be looking at how to neurodiversity 101. There's so much misunderstanding that exists out there, and I'm sure you see it all the time too, Natalie, right. where language is used incorrectly. People call individuals neurodiverse, where that's applying to more than one brain, really. Mm-hmm. Individuals who diverge from the norm would be what we call neurodivergent. So these words get mixed up all the time. Right. We're going to talk about kind of some of the history of where this comes from and build up that as the foundation. We're going to look at those ethical foundations. And then we're going to be talking about how we can adapt our couples therapy to be more neurodiversity affirming, right? Not that you have to, we do not have to come up with a completely new model. This is really important for clinicians to know. This is not about throwing the baby out with the bathwater. This is about using the models that we already have and adapting them to meet the unique neurotypes of the couple sitting in front of us. And so I'm going to show clinicians ways that they can do that and that they can start case conceptualizing around this so that they can start applying it right away in their work with couples.
That sounds amazing. It sounds very well thought out and like it's going to be really valuable for the people who get to participate. Now, this is one training and there's always that temptation to declare yourself an expert after just a little time behind the student driver wheel. And I see that only since it's emerging and dynamic. What can learning this particular material help practitioners to how will it position them on that pathway to expertise? Should we think of it as like, this is just a drop, you're just beginning to learn, or can people come out and just put a stamp on their website and say, now I'm an expert?
Please don't come out and put a stamp on your website. Call yourself an expert after 3 hours. That would not be fair right. in any shape or form. But yes. what this is it's just like what you're saying. It's a drop. It's a foundation. I think the things about when we're working in anything like this and the neurodiversity paradigm, you know, informs the neurodiversity movement, which is about anti-oppression work in this way. There's oppression within this, that when we're doing this kind of work, there is no destination that we arrive at. It is a lifelong journey of continuing to be willing to learn about this and adapt based on new information that we receive. And so for clinicians, this isn't something where you can stamp yourself a specialist, but this is something where if a couple calls and says, hey, do you know anything about working with mixed neurotype, neurodiverse couples? You can say, hey, I've actually taken a training on that and I've practiced some case conceptualization around it and I'm willing to try and see how this works for you. So I think it's really important.
So transparency, right?
Exactly. Being really, really transparent with it.
Awesome. This is WBAI Listener Supported Radio, bringing to WBAI.org and click on the donate button and give to BAI. Be sure to also become a member or renew your membership. I'm Natalie Tandiway, and today on Neurodiversity Experts Talk, we discuss clinician training and neurodiversity affirming couples therapy with Adrienne Clements, MA, licensed marriage and family therapist. Adrienne is an integrative trauma and relationship therapist specializing in working with mixed neurotype and neurodivergent couples, and she facilitates a clinician training called Ethics of Neurodiversity Affirming Couples Therapy for Mental Health Professionals. For dates and info, go to adrienneclements.com/events or bit.ly/3HUWGVY. You can also find her everywhere on social media at Therapy with Adrian on Instagram and Facebook in particular. That's at Therapy with Adrienne on Instagram and Facebook. Listeners, message your questions, suggestions, feedback to ndexpertsinfo@gmail.com or text 914-620-2995. Adrian, it has been a pleasure to speak with you. I'm so excited about this training and excited that you're getting this out there.
Thank you so much, Natalie. It has been great to be here with you today. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to share this information with your listeners.
Absolutely.
With the WBAI Community Bulletin Board. Each night at 7 p.m. at McCarran Park, there is a gathering in support of Black Lives and the Black Lives Matter movement. This is a 100% community-led nightly gathering. For more information, go to McCarran Gathering on Instagram. That's MCCAREN Gathering on Instagram. On Friday, August 6th at 11 a.m., the People's Organization for Progress will be holding a press conference at the Rodino Federal Building in Newark, New Jersey. This press conference will be taking place on the 56th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act. Lawrence Hamm, the chairman for the People's Organization for Progress, says, "The purpose of this press conference is to draw attention to the attacks on our voting rights, condemn voter suppression, and to demand restoration of the Voting Rights Act and passage of current voting rights legislation." For more information, you can call the People's Organization for Progress at 973-801-0001. That's 973-801-0001. On August 8th, join the Greenbrier Nature Center for Wildlife Conservation at the park. Learn how wildlife around the world and in our backyard is being affected by environmental changes such as habitat loss, invasive species, poaching, pollution, and more. This program is offered in partnership with the Greenbrier Nature Center, a leader in environmental education and sustainable practices that inspires people of all ages to love and respect the natural world. For more information and to snag your $5 tickets, look up Wildlife Conservation on Eventbrite. That's Wildlife Conservation on Eventbrite. On Monday, August 9th, join the Yemeni Alliance Committee for a protest at 809 United Nations Plaza. This protest is open to the public and is a day of remembrance for the 40 children that were killed on a school bus in Yemen due to Saudi airstrikes. For more information on this demonstration, go to the Yemeni Alliance Committee New York Chapter Facebook page. That's the Yemeni Alliance Committee New York Chapter on Facebook. On Saturday, August 14th at 10, join the Tri-State Tagari community for the Tagarian Lives Matter protest in Manhattan. This is a protest against the Tigray genocide and mass arrest of Tigarians in Ethiopia. For more information, visit Tri-State Tagari community Facebook page. That's the Tri-State Tagari community on Facebook. On Tuesday, August 17th, join the God Squad 67th Precinct Clergy Council for the Reducing Gun Violence Youth Summit. This is an open community dialogue and a collective, comprehensive community gathering to show solution-based initiatives that will decrease the involvement of young people in street crews, crime, and gun violence, and to hear from the youth directly. For more information, visit 67clergycouncil.org. That's the number 67clergycouncil.org. If you have events for our community board, email us at radio@wbai.org. I'm Angela Palumbo for the WBAI Community Bulletin Board.
Hi, I'm Mama Soul.
And I am The Law, and we are two of your conductors aboard the Harlem Connection. Every Friday night, we play songs by artists, and then we reveal to you how their act is connected to the village of Harlem. Like, did they live here, or where did they perform in Harlem?
But this Friday night, there will be no need for guesswork on your part because it's Harlem Week. So every act we play will have performed or appeared at the Harlem Week Festival over the past 46 years. We'll also tell you what's in store for Harlem Week 2021.
The Harlem Connection is on Friday nights at 10 o'clock on 99.5 WBAI or WBAI.org.
and WBAI.org/archive.
Dear WBAI listener, we can certainly use a little help from our friends. After years of falling behind under new management, Pacifica has now gotten its financial papers in order and can apply once again for grants. That means WBAI, which is owned by the nonprofit Pacifica Foundation, can also apply for funding. And we are looking for a pro bono grant writer to help our 61-year-old station by writing grants for us. If you have time, expertise, and interest, please contact Bertol, our station manager, at bertol@wbai.org. You'd be helping to ensure the stability and growth of this historic listener-sponsored radio station. With details, please email Bertol at WBAI.org.